The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Skiing. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings. Hello once again. This is Tony Lightfoot, the aforementioned Tony Lightfoot. This is the TWBC podcast, and glad to have the pleasure of your company once again, where I get to talk to the now two-time world slalom champion. That has a nice ring to it, doesn't it, Freddie Winter?
Makes me very happy every time I hear it, I can tell you, Tony. It's been on my mind a lot since, 9 days from a very good day in my life. I'm very, very, very happy.
Indeed. And the celebrations kind of start now a little bit, although you kind of had this little vacation planned weeks and months in advance. Let me give you the situation where we're at right now. I mean, you're on the other side of the world. I'm here in Zachary, Louisiana, getting ready for the Collegiate Nationals, which was another phase in your skiing career, which you've definitely covered yourself with glory in that respect. But where am I talking to you from now?
I'm sitting in a hostel in Mumbai, India. Uh-huh. I just arrived this morning. Basically slept all day, I'm a bit tired. The celebrations did not start today. They started as soon as I landed in England last week, and I can tell you that didn't get much sleep. I have very good friends who don't know much about water skiing, but they are very supportive, and they looked after me, bought me a beer or two, and helped me out sort of going to bed no earlier than 4:30 in the morning for five consecutive nights. So it's been a wild week, but. If you're even my parents who usually would disapprove of me doing this sort of reckless stuff, they said to me, well, you know what, Freddie, if you're not going to do it now, then when are you going to do it? So, yeah, I've enjoyed myself. And actually, in some ways,
I love Martin and Hillary. I love them both.
So do I. And in some ways, getting away to, you know, somewhere remote that I don't really know anyone will actually help me be a bit more of a serious human being. I'll see some very interesting stuff, but I'm not going to be... out partying every night, which I think is probably a good thing because it's all very tempting right now.
Okay, so the reason why you're out there in India is because the country is in the midst of the Cricket World Cup right now, which probably doesn't mean an awful lot for our folks that are listening to this stateside. But for basically the other two-thirds of the world, it's a pretty big deal.
Well, and especially the country that I'm in, you know, cricket is a big-ish sport in England, and in Australia and South Africa and New Zealand. But, you know, in some ways, despite England creating the sport, the home of it is India and Pakistan. I mean, it's absolutely huge here as a religion. So when I've wanted to come to India for a while and see a different part of the world. But then when I saw in the summer that the World Cup was going to be on right now, I was like, well, I mean, if I've got to go and do a pilgrimage over there. It's lined up at the right time. England look like they might have a chance. They've done terribly so far, but I'll see the next three games. I'm missing the India game. I couldn't get a ticket to the India game, which, you know, kind of stands to reason with how big it is. But I'm seeing Sri Lanka, Australia, which is going to be brilliant, and I'm going to see them against Pakistan. So really exciting.
Yep, some free mega powers in cricket, all test nations. But let's go back 9 days ago, the World Championships, and you were among the contenders for the World Slalom Championship. Kind of remind me, where were you on the starting list? You were fairly soon off the dock, weren't you?
I was 7th out of 12, but I didn't think I was representative of anything. Yeah, I mean, I think I've got to be careful what I say, of course, because, you know, there's a sort of Damocles above me where if I get too honest, let's say. But, you know, I think conditions during the preliminary round were less than ideal with the sun where it was. And I think, you know, like I said in the interview afterwards, all the skiers after a certain point were just trying to survive and get through to the final as opposed to perform. Mm-hmm. So I don't, you know, I think being sixth to last, that wasn't necessarily where I thought I probably deserved to be. I felt really, really good out there, but you just couldn't see boy two at all, which at least I managed to get through.
At least you weren't last off in a runoff, because according to the documentary, that's the last place you want to be, right?
Yeah, well, that's true. No, that's true. I mean, I didn't mind being where I was, but without being too spiky, I didn't think it was, like I say, representative of how I'd skied in the preliminary round. I actually felt amazing in the preliminary round, but, ran a 10.75 in the tailwind, which is not an insignificant tailwind. I thought it was maybe one of my best of the year, and we had everything lined up. It is an amazing lake. We had, great drivers. I think it was scheduled wrong for the ranked best skiers in the world to be skiing into a crazy, what were they calling it on the webcast? Sunstrike, which means just being blind.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, you know, I wasn't too stressed about it, about my placement, because I'd been skiing so well. I mean, I don't know what sort of had changed, but right after right before the Travers Grand Prix, I started just to ski really, really good. And you don't really want to vocalize that particularly too much, but I mean, you know, I've been skiing with the Stadelbauers and the guys over at Swiss, and I don't think I've ever skied better, to be quite honest with you. I mean, maybe a number of years ago I had a few streaky bits here and there, but I just felt so confident. I had everything, just it felt like it was lining up, which almost made me more and more stressed, because I'm like, okay, this is not something I'm reaching for. It's closer to the palm of my hand. Obviously there's other amazing skiers who can run huge scores, but I just felt like, well, I'm there, I can do this. So it put more pressure on me to actually, you know, go and actually do it on the day.
Was there any moment from the previous results that you had all season? And I mean, you made it onto the podium pretty much every single tournament that you skied in all season long.
Tony, every tournament, mate.
Tournament.
It put pressure, because I only say that because it put pressure, because I'm like, my God, if I go to the world and don't make the podium, it's the biggest tournament, and I didn't make it on the podium after having done it all year. So I would have felt extra stupid. You know what I mean? So, like, as much as all these things are very helpful to you know, make you feel good about yourself, that you have the ability, you know, skiing very well and leading up to the tournament is a good thing, but it puts more pressure in some ways. You get a little bit more stressed. And the same with, like, having, you know, a season which I really felt I accomplished a good amount. I wanted to really finish it on a high.
All right then, but I mean, when you skied and you got about 2/3 the way down 10.25 meters, right? You then had to wait, what is it, 4 or 5 more skiers to determine where your final placings would be. Kind of give us an overview of what that was like, you know, because getting out there and doing it is one thing, and then waiting to see if that was good enough is quite another thing entirely, right?
Absolutely, and I tell you what, I mean, I was so unbelievably mad at myself that I ran four, having, I mean, I think I was knocking down that pass a lot in practice. And I don't think I've ever fallen from 4 to 5 like that at any pass, you know, having been in such good shape. So to me, it felt like I'd massively choked. The first bad turn I had of the whole set was boy 4 at 10.25, which is my onside. And it's a turn that I always make. Now, 5, not necessarily, but 5 is a lot more of a sure thing than 4, especially with, you know, very, very good skiers come after me. So, I mean, not ashamed to admit it, but I had a couple of tears in my eyes when I was sitting on the side of the lake there right after I skied. I'm like, I've just you know, dropped the world championship title from my hand. I thought if I'd have run 10.25, which I think I was in very, very good shape to do, or at the very least run 5, I had a really good chance. But it felt like with those 5 skiers left, you know, Nate runs it more often than not, and Dane's been running big scores, and and Joel ran the whole thing in the first round there. So I was pretty sure I wasn't going to win. And people just started falling. And, you know, the key one was when Nate went down. I was like, oh my God. I mean, like, that's just because he had a good one. And that's where I started to, I was pretty relaxed. Not relaxed. I mean, I wasn't like, I didn't really think I had won, I could win the Worlds until Nate went down. And then, of course, there was just Joel after that. And Joel is my favorite skier on the dock. You know, in most tournaments, I've known the guy since forever. He's a really, really good dude. I pulled up down the lake for many hours in the early 2010s. But I have to say, if I, in my head, I'm going, Joel, if you take the world championships away from me when you're an overall skier, I'm never going to talk to you again.
No, you didn't do that. No, you did not do that.
No, of course, in my head, I'm just like, I love him, but I'm going to really struggle to forgive him. He's an overall skier. And he's going to win lots of world overall titles. He's lots of world jump titles.
He's never been on the dock with you in that situation, though, in competition, though, because I mean, in all fairness to Joel Poland, his strengths are tricks and jump, slalom not so much. But then he produced that elimination round score, and he's finding himself on the dock right now. Just really waiting for the opportunity to take all you guys down.
Well, as soon as he went down in tricks, which was a very, very sad moment, I mean, for a lot of us who are big fans of Joel, I was like, well, I wish he'd done that after slalom, because I don't want him to come and take my place in the final. I knew he was going to do something special. I knew he was going to run four. I did not think he'd run six. But, you know, and then again, he didn't have his best jump round. He had a very disappointing jump round in the morning after the rescheduled jump situation. And I was like, well, he wasn't able to get the overall, he had an opportunity to get the overall title. You know, if he'd have jumped 71.6 meters, whatever it was, and he had it, which he's capable of. And he had an opportunity to win jump, or at least get on the podium for jump, and he ended up disappointed. And I mean, I know the guy. He is an absolute animal, one of the strongest people in his mind that I know, especially when it comes to water skiing. So I was a bit concerned that he might just take it out on you. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, like, and again, I mean, this is a guy that's my friend, so you feel awful, but I mean, you know, I've trained all my life to be in a world championship final, right? So, you know, I was happy to win the world championships when it came up that he didn't beat me.
All right, then. So you win the world championships. You know, I mean, the instant that you knew that Joel Poland had come up short, and what was it on 10.75 meters, and or
10.25. He ran two inside of three.
Yeah, exactly. Inside three at 10.25 meters. What was that immediate emotion like?
Well, I mean, I was, like I say, I was so stressed. I mean, it's exactly the same as 2017, right? So I went out middle of the pack, and then actually that day I got a good score that I thought would hold up. I thought it'd be a runoff, you know, and I thought Nate would be the guy to do it. He was second to last off the dock. He goes down early, and suddenly I was like, oh my God, you know, this is real. I could win a world championships here. Then it was Brando Caruso. He's out the last skier. And again, you know, Brando, as we've seen this year, he's an incredibly strong skier. But back then, he was a guy that was streaky in that he could just go and get a huge score out of nowhere. And he's a pretty headstrong guy. So I was really nervous. I remember thinking at that time, this is the biggest pass of my life, and I'm not even involved in it. I'm just watching. I'm a spectator. So, you know, kind of the same thing with Joel. Like, it was just like, I don't have any control of what's going on, right? And I'm so on the edge and so close. But, I, being honest, I mean, you know, as competitors, you don't want your people you ski against to go better than you. And I was still thinking, come on, Joel, don't do this to me. But I mean, pure bliss, you know. It was huge relief. And I, you know, in the interview with Wade, I like every five words I had, I was like fading in and out of like the realization that actually happened. And every, you know, every decision I've made this year, and I mean, I could tell you some really stupid ones. I bought a gold watch because I'm going to win world this year. Like, I bought a stupid gold Casio because every time I look at my watch, I bought it on January 1st. You know, like, this, it's been that sort of like every decision has been based on the world championship. And then I'm standing over Wade and I'm like, I don't have to think ahead anymore. Like, this is, it's done. And I did what I set out to do. And it's just a dream. It really is a dream.
Certainly. So then another set of emotions creeps in. The podium, where you get to say, "God save old sausage fingers."
No, I wish we had a different song. I wish we had "I Vow to Thee My Country" or "Jerusalem" or something. I'd love to have "Jerusalem" there instead of. "God Save the King" or whatever it is, but you know. But there you go. I mean, I'm like I've told you before, I'm not an anti-monarchist. I don't like Charles particularly, and I think that there are better songs out there. But you know, hey, I'm happy to hear I'm happy to hear that song if it means that I'm standing on top of the podium. Very happy to hear it.
Indeed, indeed. Obviously, during the course of today's action on that day, there were a lot of controversy with the switching of the events. You obviously heard one or two of the comments by the jumpers themselves. You know, criticizing the decision to go forward. From your point of view, you probably have a slightly different opinion, but. Do you have any comments on that and how it was handled and that kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, I think the decision could have been made earlier. It's like anything. I mean, it's like the decision for the men's slalom to ski into the glare. I saw it coming on Monday, and made a point to my team captain to talk about it. You know, because the weather was so bad on Thursday, it seemed obvious that the women's jump was going to be cancelled. So. You know, my complaints would be that these decisions, if they're going to have to be made, then make them early. Having said that, when it comes to the jump, you know, I think that when Ali Nicholson, when Manon skied, and when I did my first two pass, I think that was when fortunately got better for me. But I mean, those were if people would have been jumping in those conditions, I think it would have been extraordinarily dangerous. So I think the right decision was made for the safety of the jumpers. And you know, I did see that this ban was going to be men's slalom. It was only going to be worse and worse as the day went on. And on average, the conditions for men's slalom was very, very tough. I don't know. I mean, you know, I do think scheduling is hard, especially with weather, but we do have weather forecasts. I think people should tend to, it's always a good idea to look at weather forecast and be flexible with the schedule and to have, you know, a plan B as much as a plan A and maybe a plan C. So I mean, I understand the frustrations of the skiers. You know, you train 2 years for this, and then it gets changed at the last minute. And I mean, I only heard that I wasn't going to ski it. Like I had it in my mind that I was going to ski it midday or whatever it was, right?
Yeah.
Because that was the original schedule. So then I go to and then I get a text that sort of, you know, 8:30 at night or whatever from someone from a competitor, not a team captain, because my team captain hadn't been called. He'd been texted and he hadn't seen his text. So like, it just seemed like it could have been communicated earlier, seen further ahead. And you know, then I had to, I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but like you sit on the side of a lake all day for another 3 hours, and I didn't ski till about, I don't know, 2:30, let's say. And so I had to have lunch before. So it changed my whole, like, you know, when you have lunch, you want to wake up early. I don't know. It's, but I also do think it's good that, like, I know that the powers that be don't necessarily like it, that skiers have an opinion on these things, because they just want to, you know, be able to sort of not have any backwash, let's say. But I like that people are talking about it, and I think that my problem, I think, in the past with issues in water skiing is that issues happen, they're not talked about, and then they happen again. And frankly, let's say, you know, men's slalom at the last World Championship was the exact same situation, skiing straight into the sun at, 6:30 at night. Well, fortunately, there was a cloud or two then, but it wasn't rectified for this year. You know, it was very clear to see what was going to happen if the women's slalom got put in ahead. So I think that, you know, the more this is discussed, it shouldn't have to come from the skiers that there is a finger point at what's going wrong. It should be noticed by those not in a competitive role that are organizing these things. But I also think that doesn't always happen. And, you know, when pointing a finger at a controversy actually allows for steps to be taken for it not to happen again, versus it's not always just destructive, it can be constructive. And I think that was certainly my aim when I had a chat with Wade after the first round, saying that it sucked that had to happen. And I think that was probably the aim of a couple of people that had a word or two after the jump, after they jumped or before they jumped. I did hear a rumor that there was a talk of a disqualification for one of the jumpers because he spoke his mind. And
wow,
you know, it's just think that's disappointing, isn't it? I mean, you know, it seems that there's an urge to control everything when at the end of the day, people should be allowed to have an opinion.
Indeed, indeed. Now, You're over there in India. I'm here in Zachary, Louisiana, and there are a few more competitors that are competing in the Pan Am Games. I mean, probably a tournament that you don't really focus in on, or even hear about, or do too much, or analyze too much on that. But some of the early results that have come out have been pretty impressive, you know. And have you seen any of the results in the Pan Am Games so far?
Tony, I can promise you that it has not been my focus. I you know, as far as I was concerned, water skiing for 2023 finished on the 15th of October.
Okay, that's fine. I'm just curious as to whether you keep an eye on stuff of like know if they, even though you might not be directly a part of the action, always keep an ear to the ground and see what's going on. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, the times I've been injured in the past, and I've had an injury here or there, and I've a fairly significant one in 2016 where I was kept out of like five or six tournaments. That was like really tough because I felt like I should be there and be competitive. But I mean, the thing is, I've always been a big fan of water skiing, but I also don't necessarily believe in this, being part of these big games. Cause I think it's the IOC holding a carrot in front of water skiing that's just never going to be achieved. You know, they're never going to be part of the Olympics. I don't think there's infrastructure in place for us to be part of the Olympics. So I just think I don't care to follow that particularly. I also think that, I mean, I don't think this is any surprise to anyone, but I believe that pro water skiing is the future of water skiing. And, as much as I'm desperately happy to be a two-time world champion, it's been my dream my whole life. I think that in the end, if water skiing is going to be something that can allow people to make a living from and have a huge spectatorship from around the world, it's not going to be one-off tournaments here and there. It's a whole tour, and ultimately the Formula One series is the person who wins that is the world champion. So it's like I said to Wade, I haven't been the best skier in the world this year. But I do think I've been the second best in my class, in my men's slalom. So in some ways, that's an injustice to the person that has been the best skier in the world.
Yeah.
That I've moved up a spot. So if there was every chance, if I'd have skied 5 minutes earlier and I had the wind of my first two passes on my last two passes, I would have. I'm certain I wouldn't have run 10.75. I mean, I was laughing after my 12-meter pass, after my second pass, literally laughing, going, "This is just a joke." And so, conditions do play a part in these things, but I think that, ultimately, best skier is decided over the course of a season. And the Pan Am Games is very far down the list of things that I would care about in terms of water skiing.
I figured I'd ask anyway, just to get your views on that. So,
I'll give one, Tony. That's why.
Of course, that's why I asked. Anyway, so do you have an eye to next season at this point? Or, you've seen the movie, haven't you? A Rush, right? The one that chronicles James Hunt and Niki Lauda.
Absolutely.
You've seen that movie,
James Hunt, hero of mine.
Yeah. So that much of a hero, do you take? His approach of like, it's the end of the season, I'm going to enjoy myself, celebrate it up? Or do you take the view of Niki Lauda, who's already looking forward to developing the car for next season, or that kind of stuff?
What I know about myself is that I can't be intense 365 days of the year, so I need to take time away, and that's what I'm going to do now. And I also, what I know as well is that at the end of last season, I took 2.5 months away from water skiing. I mean, my shoulder was in pretty bad shape. I had this nerve thing that they managed to finally figure out, not so early, mid to end of January this year, in terms of diagnosis, and then sort of, and then was like, hey, go ahead and try and we'll see how it goes. And fortunately, it's gone well. I then having had taken basically close to 3 months off, I then had my best season ever. So, I know you know, that I need to have time away in order to be fully on for the time on. I don't think I need to make any, you know, equipment changes or anything like that. Like, you know, I think I've got the best year of my career. I truly do love it. That the Neo 2, and I think my boot setup's good, and I kind of, you know, I certainly have stuff to work on technically, and I think that's been a big part of why I've been seen on more podiums this year than maybe previously, and I think I've got a few levers to pull in terms of improving my technique, but I don't think that I'm, yeah, no, I need to step away from water skiing for a little bit, because otherwise I'll get very burnt out with it. And I think that, you know, that same thing, like after you know, we had our sort of mid-season break in you know, in mid-July to mid-August, and I definitely took some time away there and spent time with my friends outside of skiing and didn't think about water skiing that much. It's always there, but I didn't think about it in the same way that I do when it's intense. And I came back, and I the last five tournaments of the year I came second, first. So, you know, that seems to be something that works for me, is, you know, take a bit of a mental break so that I can go like full on intense and, you know, sort of psycho for it, you know, it when the time comes.
I know you keep your ear fairly close to the ground so far as what events are coming up and maybe what's on the horizon for 2024. From what I understand, Miami is back. I also believe that Hilltop is back on the schedule. I mean, I don't have it in front of me, and it's not by no means confirmed, but it's an encouraging sign going forward that there are still the existing events such as Caiaphas and San Gervasio and Botas and all of those events that are still on the Canada, but with the addition of a few more, it definitely spices up the season going forward, huh?
Well, I think it was very sad this year for Hilltop not to be a part of it. And you know, I don't begrudge anyone not wanting to put on a tournament. They're very hard. You don't make any money, and you have to come up with a lot of money, and there's a huge amount of work that goes into it, and so that was a shame for this year. Without putting any blame on anyone, I'm very grateful for every tournament we have. So, but I am extremely happy to you know, that Hilltop is trying to figure out how to come back, and you know, the danger we have at the moment, which is kind of in some ways a good thing, is that we don't have enough weekends. So you've got all these, yeah. You're like, and what's so great is we have all these tournaments. There's, you know, there's another one in England trying to get things together, and there's a few, you know, a few here and there, that, and they're fighting over these weekends, and that's a good problem. That's a good problem to have for us skiers. It gives us options.
Indeed.
And there's, you know, any situation where it's like, look at the competition men's slalom, it's just gone up and up and up. There's more people who can run big scores, so the scores go up, right? Well, the same for us competitors. The more competitions pushing to get these weekends, then, you know, the prize money goes up. You know, more skiers turn up. It's better for the audience. It's better for everyone. It's win. So, yeah, the schedule is getting quite tight, but I really like the cadence of it this year, to have, you know, intense start of the year, well, start Moomba, then a month or two off. It would be nice to have a few more around Moomba. That would, I think, would be my choice, would be to have, you know, the next week after Moomba, have maybe another one in Australia or New Zealand, or I don't know, Dubai or something like that, have a little tour there, and then have, you know, Swiss, and then, I mean, I don't think I need to explain my thoughts on the Masters qualifiers.
I think that's well documented.
Well, yeah, just because I think that those weekends would be better for skiers to earn money instead of guaranteed to be locked to losing money. You know what I mean? It's one thing going to a pro tournament and skiing badly and losing money, but if you're going to a tournament to enter another tournament, you're ending up spending a lot of money to try and enter a tournament which you know it's hard to get into anyway. So fortunately, I'm already qualified, which is nice. So
you've got a ticket for 2 years, haven't you? You got this coming year and the one after, because you're world champion, right?
I don't think they go with that anymore.
They don't. Okay.
I don't think world champion gets in. I think I heard that fairly recently. I think you have to be Masters champion and a handful of tournaments, but I'm not sure. Either way, I'll try and get in for 2025. But yeah, I think the cadence works pretty well. I mean, I would change the month of May a little bit to have a few more pro tournaments in there, and, you know, have you know, if Master wants to take qualifiers, take it from tournaments in May, where, you know, it's kind of where skiers can kind of, you know, make money in front of the cameras. The Swiss Pro would be a good example, right? I mean, everyone watches that event. It's a Nautique tournament. It's always got huge scores and everyone turns up, but it's not a qualifier for the Masters. And I don't necessarily understand that, because then there's a tournament at like a random, you know, like a good ski school, but no one's watching the following week, and that counts and Swiss doesn't, which I don't understand. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I don't make the rules or make those decisions, and I, you know, hopefully they can change. I think that would be a big change, that basically every one of the people I ski with, men and women, slalom, trick, and well, slalom and jump, I mean, tricks less so because they don't really have that many professional events, would be happier with. That's just, I mean, that's all we hear when people talk about it. Everyone goes, well, you know, I don't like those qualifiers, but anyway. But yeah, we're tight on weekends for the tournaments that you mentioned, and you know, ideally they all get in, and it can be organised. I think, you know, it's good people working on that.
All right then. So we'll round off this podcast a little bit. I'm talking to Freddie Winter, who's in India right now. If you could probably hear the sounds in the backgrounds, the crowds and the tuk tuks, you know, and the horns beeping in the background. So what game are you heading over to this evening, or is that tomorrow evening?
Well, I'm figuring out if I get a 21-hour train leaving tomorrow at 8 o'clock.
Oh my word!
Or if I get a flight more in the middle of the day. But I think the proper way would be to get the train.
Yes.
But you can get a bed and all that sort of thing. I was just when you called, I was sort of looking at my phone trying to figure it out. But I'll get there. And so the next match, or the first match that I'm going to be going to, is England versus Sri Lanka. That's in Bangalore. On Thursday. It's Thursday, 2 o'clock local time. So that's pretty exciting. And then what have I got after that? Then I'm going to see New Zealand versus South Africa. I'm seeing and then Australia. The one I'm really excited for is Australia versus England, because as we as Brits know, the Australians are always cheating in sport. So
I'll be sure to forward that to Joel Howley.
Yeah, no, he's all right. But well, let's say the Australian cricketers are shocking. I mean, what they did in England this year was embarrassing, and I'm really excited to give it to them. We'll probably lose to them because we're playing so badly at the moment, but I'm hoping there'll be a lot of Brits out there, a lot of English people, and I'll have a beer with them, and I'm really excited for that one.
All right then, and try not to not get into any altercations or anything like that, you know.
All good natured, I think.
Indeed it is, yeah. All right, then. That was my conversation with Freddie Winter. Once again, congratulating you on your second World Slalom title. Anything else you want to say in closing?
No, well, I mean, just thank you. Thank you for what you guys did. I think probably we can say it was the best webcast ever, was the World Championships. I mean, it's mm-hmm. by viewership. And I mean, it was great, and the whole season was amazing. We're so lucky to have TWBC, and you know, you guys are. It's well known. Everyone says, if it's not TWBC, I'm not bloody watching it, which is pretty cool, right? you guys are doing a good job. I hear that. I hear it all the time. It always makes me laugh.
Yeah, indeed. So you go ahead. You enjoy the off season. And that was my conversation with Freddie Winter. Another episode of the TWBC podcast will be coming up relatively soon. So as I typically say, I don't know how to say it in Indian or anything, but I mean, I'll just say ciao for now.
Cheers, Tony.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.